Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In studio every Friday, 5:30. But this, I regret to inform our listeners, is one of the final ones. No, this is the final one for 2019. J. Joseph Harrington.
Well, I appreciate the formality, but you're not just informing the listeners, you're informing me. I didn't realize that I didn't get to come in the next couple weeks.
You can come, but no one will be here.
It's tempting. It's tempting. Yeah. Can I host the show?
You can. I tell you what, you come through here during the holidays, you can probably jump on all six stations.
No.
There's
really?
No one here. Just go in, crack a mic, see what happens. Could be fun.
Story time with Joey on every station for Intercom.
On 99.5 The Wolf.
Yeah.
Well, sir, Pac-12 champs, man.
Didn't see that coming.
No. And you know what, man? When you're built the way Oregon is, we've talked about this all season on the line of scrimmage. They hadn't been playing well.
Oh, my God.
You were worried about them. The worry meter was at peak levels.
Oh, it was all-time high.
But when you're built like that from the inside out, you got a shot no matter who you're playing, no matter when you're playing, no matter how you're playing.
Okay, now let me qualify this. We saw, or I saw, or whatever, you know, when we're talking about this, we saw this coming based on the trajectory of their season, you know, from Colorado on prior to the Arizona State game, right? As the season was going on, we were all sitting there saying, all right, this is playoff. They're going to beat Utah. This is where they're going to end up. And then they, you know, had a brain fart against Arizona State and then looked really sluggish against Oregon State. And we were all thinking like, oh man, like, what happened? And then they ended up in the exact same spot. It was, you know, if you're looking at that, the graph, the x-axis and the y-axis and the diagonal trend up, and then all of a sudden there was just like a stock market crash, and then boop, they ended up, you know, they shot right back up and ended up in the same spot that we thought they were going to be at the beginning. But I don't think that anybody saw that type of performance top to bottom.
The way they punched him in the mouth.
Oh my God.
And Utah had been playing so well.
So well.
Like, that's just a satisfying win. I'm sure as a player, there are some wins that are far more satisfying than other wins.
Yes.
I don't know. What was your most satisfying win in college?
Satisfying?
Yeah, like the one where you're like, yeah. It was probably the Fiesta Bowl.
Was probably the most satisfying. I mean, they were definitely more exciting. Like, that's, we had all sorts of, you know, last minute comeback win in the fourth quarter stuff, but that Fiesta Bowl was probably the most satisfying.
So, 10-2.
Yeah. Rose Bowl. Conference champs.
11-2. Pac-12 champs. But the Auburn loss, the inexplicable Arizona State loss.
Are we going to go there?
No. No, I'm not, actually. I just, like, would you still play the Auburn game? Was the only road I was going down.
Okay, cool. We can go down
because
that road.
Because they've had, I think, well, actually, I would tell you this, and I think the listeners would agree, I've gone out of my way to make sure not to seem like it was a failure.
Yeah, to poo-poo the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
To talk down on the fact that they just won the conference championship.
We've got to be careful to do that because this was sensational.
Absolutely.
There was a moment in there where it was really disappointing.
True.
But I just, in hindsight, it's like the Arizona State game, you said it all year, the Arizona State game, that's going to happen. It's coming. You know it's coming. You just got to fight it off and hopefully you win. Well, they didn't. So that happened.
Right.
That one I just don't think you can avoid. The Auburn game is interesting because you can go back and you can say, well, they should have scheduled a cupcake like Washington did the year they made the college football playoff. Or you could say, no, you play Auburn. You play those games. You just got to hold on and win it.
Agreed. That's where I go. Because I don't say you don't schedule Auburn. I say you just need to buck up and beat Arizona State, right? Because if they did win out, which we had all expected them to do, that Auburn game would have been the difference maker, right? If we're comparing, right, you're comparing a loss of Georgia against South Carolina, you know, a crummy South Carolina team, or you're comparing a loss of Oregon against a good Auburn team, right? I mean, I will never back away from playing those early season games because, one, it tells your team anyone, anywhere, anytime. Two, it sets your strength of schedule up, which, you know, I know there's no formula for it anymore, but it does play into the mind of the committee. And three, it's a great recruiting tool, right? It's a chance to go down to Texas and play Auburn and do it in front of the recruits that you are trying to get, you know, to get eyeballs. So I would never second guess that. What I will say is that you got to beat Arizona State. And that's the difference. And it's interesting. You were sitting there saying which one loss team is going to get into the playoff? Which one loss team, you know, how are we going to decide between all these one loss teams? How many one loss teams were there?
There ended up being what? One.
One. Three undefeateds and one one loss team.
That's why it's so
because
futile.
That's what happens in November in college. Yeah. That happens every year. So it's not change your schedule so you don't have to play Auburn. It's stay focused, know that those bumps are going to come, be prepared for that, and truly prove that you are one of the best teams in college football. Because had you beaten Arizona State, that Auburn game wouldn't have mattered. Oregon would have gone over Oklahoma. If an Oregon team is going to be head-to-head with an Oklahoma team with one loss, Oregon is going to go. That's how it would have worked. And so that Auburn game would have done nothing, to, you know, changing that Auburn game, or you didn't need to. You didn't need to change the Auburn
game
to get into it.
Well, you could say if you lost Arizona State, if you hadn't lost Auburn, you lose to Arizona State, you're probably still going. So it works both ways. I mean, they couldn't
lose
one of
those
games.
I would say that there would be more debate between Oklahoma and Oregon, and in a case where Oklahoma may win. But if you're debating who had the better loss between Oklahoma and Oregon right now, it would have been Oregon.
I would think, too, playing a game like Auburn right out of the gate, one, focuses your team, gets you ready, like you, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to whomever, Tennessee State or whatever. And two, I think that that's like that's just a huge game I think this of college basketball, where I don't understand, the season's so long and the tournament's so tough and you're going to run into tough teams in the tournament if you just make the tournament, that you should play the toughest possible non-conference schedule you can in college basketball to prepare you for the tournament. That's if you're in Oregon, if you're a Kansas, a Kentucky.
Right.
And I think Oregon in football is at the level of, hey, you play these games. You play these games so that your team knows what it's like to play against the best teams. It prepares you to go through the tough Power Five conference season.
Absolutely. You play one of those games and you take two paydays. That's how it works. And anybody who says otherwise, I don't want to say they're scared, but they're trying to take the easy way into it, right? They're trying to find a loophole. They're trying to find, you know, some way to back their way into, to hedge their bets. Well, in the event that they lose a game during conference, then they can fall back. Well, just don't lose. Just be better than everybody.
Joey Harrington in studio every Friday, courtesy BMW Portland. So before we get into, I want to ask you about Arroyo. And then I also want to talk to you about, you were in Atlanta with Mike Vick.
I was.
And I'd like to talk to you about that in terms of what Lamar Jackson is doing. But before we get to that, what is your assessment of where the Oregon program is moving forward? Like what are realistic expectations as they hit the recruiting trail here and pack up for another season? Because a lot of fans, the reason I ask is I want Joey Harrington to tell the audience, here's what's realistic. You're a level-headed guy. You're inside the program. You know what's going on. A lot of fans, I feel like, were spoiled by the Chip Kelly years.
Mm-hmm.
And then this, you know, sniffing around a college football playoff. I feel like expectations, and rightly so, should be very high.
Right.
But what's realistic coming from you?
You want me to answer this right now, or is this a tease coming back from the break?
Let's do this, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Arroyo.
Got it. Okay, if I'm looking at this objectively, I see losing Justin Herbert. I see losing Troy Dye. Right, I see losing key pieces on both sides of the ball. I see losing four offensive linemen, a significant rebuilding operation that is going to be at hand. Now, that being said, you've got the Outland Trophy winner and, you know, potentially the... did Orlando Pace win the Heisman? No, he didn't.
No.
Let's say Penei Sewell is going to be the first Heisman-winning offensive lineman. You have building blocks in place. Cristobal and his staff have done an incredible job of recruiting. That has been one of their strong points. And you know, the criticism for Mario has been game management, team management. You know, I think he's done a good job of alleviating some of that and showing that, you know, through his experience now that he can make the right, you know, the good decisions. I would say next year, I've got question marks. I want to see who's going to be quarterback. I want to see how Shuck's going to do. I want to see what the offensive line is going to look like. I want to see, there are things, but those are no different than any other team in any other year, right? So I think it's realistic to, whereas this year you said with Justin, we have a chance to be in the college football playoff. I think it's realistic to be in the discussion of a conference championship every season. Now, does that mean that you're running the table to win a conference championship? No, we were, 11 and 2. Yeah. It always throws me off because there's 12 games. There's a conference champion. They play too much. Anyway, you know, you can lose a couple games and still win the conference championship. That is a realistic point every single year. And in those years where you do have the Justin Herberts, the Marcus Mariotas, the LaMichael James, you know, in those years where you do have that collection of special talent, which Coach Cristobal has shown he's been able to deliver on, then you can set those goals of, hey, this, or not even set the goals because the team is always setting that goal. But you can, as a fan, bring yourself to say, yeah, this could be the year. Right, mm-hmm. This could be a realistic year where we could make a run at it. But there's no reason that you can't think that they can have at least be in the competition for the conference championship every year.
Agreed. When we come back, Marcus Arroyo is leaving. What's next for the Oregon offense? We'll get to that with Joey, and then we'll talk about his days in Atlanta with Mike Vick. Joey Harrington in studio with us here on 1080 The Fan. Okay, we're back with Joey Harrington. I wanted to touch on Marcus Arroyo, who has taken the UNLV job, before we get into some NFL stuff with you, Joey. This is another one where it's like, it's kind of like the season where it's like, man, that was a really good season. We shouldn't, you know, kick this guy on the way out. He was good, top 20 offense. But at the same time, all season we sat here on Fridays and talked about, especially after Auburn, wish he would have opened it up a little bit more or trusted Herbert a little bit more, or the offense was vanilla at times or predictable at times.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you before I forget what I was going to say. And you said all season on Fridays we talked about this.
Much of the season.
We talked about it for the first 5 weeks. And then once he hit Colorado, things changed.
The Washington game, I thought, well, you're right.
That was a defensive brain fart. That was, you know, that was... Washington game, because they put up 35.
No, what I was saying was I think the Washington game was the one where we all came back here that next Friday and said, man, Royo had a damn good
got
game.
Got it. Was Washington before Colorado?
Don't remember.
It was all in the same, but I remember, for some reason, I remember Colorado and I think that was the week before Washington. But yeah, you're right. That first half of the season, and it was piggybacked on last year's... constructive criticism, but there was a turning point for Marcus this year, and I think we all saw it.
It's
tough because when you're trying to build a tough, hard-nosed, run first, win in the trenches type of program, but you've got arguably the best quarterback in the country, how do you find that balance?
Some people would suggest that it was hard for Arroyo because Cristobal wanted to play that style. You know, I don't know how much that affected Arroyo's play calling or his offense, but the guy did a good job. But it's kind of exciting to see Mario Cristobal get to go around now, and the Ducks can pay. They pay assistants. They pay Jim Leavitt, I think, at one point.
It was 1.2 or something like that.
He one of the highest paid guys? Yeah. So, and I think that's a big part of it. If you couldn't pay, I'd be worried. But you can pay. It's exciting to see what could be next with with the Oregon offense with a fresh set of eyes.
And I don't think it's kicking a guy on the way out to simply say that you're excited of what excited to see what comes next.
Right.
I don't even know where to begin. Like, where do you go? Because I'm curious to see where Mario goes, because you're right in that I'm sure that there was a little bit of, I don't want to call it tension between Arroyo and Cristobal, but Marcus knowing that he's got the best quarterback in the country, and but also knowing that his head coach wants to establish a certain type of culture. I'm curious to see, you know, because you're not going to get nor is Mario going to go out and try and find a Mike Leach, you know, air raid type of guy. That's not going to be the type of coach that he's going to bring in. But I'm curious to see. And I don't even have suggestions. I mean, that's the, you know, racking my brain of trying to think.
Yeah, I think it's a total wild card, like who he's going to pick. Yeah. And you just got to trust them. I mean,
because there's so many schools that have now gone that direction that, yes. You know, I'm thinking, okay, well, Oklahoma chucks it all over the place. And, you know, and even, you know, Alabama, they're chucking it all over the place. You know, you go through the, I mean, there has definitely been a transition of college football. And I don't think that Cristobal is the David Shaw, Jim Harbaugh type of, you know, where everybody was, you know, spreading it out and going fast. They went big and multiple tight ends and pounded it down your throat to win a couple conference championships at Stanford. I don't think Mario's going fully that direction, but I think that there is going to be a balance for the guy that he's looking for.
Yeah, I just, the only thing as a fan outside looking in that I would say is, you just mentioned Alabama, how they used to just be ground and pound, just rely on defense.
LSU
has totally opened it up. Oklahoma, I swear to God, runs for 200 yards and throws for 200 yards every week. It's unbelievable what Lincoln Riley has done. So it's possible. I don't know who that guy is.
But see, here's the thing that people don't understand. And I don't say don't understand, but don't factor into the equation. Sure, Oklahoma's running for 200 and throwing for 300, but how many points are they giving up, right? During those Chip Kelly days when we were putting up 50 points a game, we were giving up 38, 39, 40. I mean, we were against the good teams, right? Now, I'm not talking about the Cals when you win 55-10, but it puts a stress on your defense. And so if Cristobal is thinking that I want to be a defensive-minded team, you are... Your offensive play calling has a direct effect on how your defense performs. And so you have to be very careful when you say, well, God, look at Oklahoma, who's throwing for two or throwing for three and running for two every game. What are they doing on defense? What kind of toll is that having on their defense?
And they have a hell of a defensive coordinator. They hired Alex Grinch. And it's funny you say that, because Alabama and LSU, it's like they're known for their defense, and now their offenses are
exactly
wide open.
What happened
and their
to
defenses.
What happened to LSU once Joe Burrow started going crazy?
Yeah,
LSU's now exactly. Their so they used slipped. To win games 14-9, and now they're scoring 40, but they're giving up 28.
So it's about fit with Avalos, fit with the culture. What is the key from a guy who has played to the offensive coordinator quarterback relationship? What are the key elements of that?
Oof. Trust, you know, I remember when Coach Tedford came in and I was a redshirt freshman, there was a certain amount of, you know, guys get used to, get comfortable. They get used to the things that they do, their routine, what they're taught. When you're trying to teach new concepts and a new way of doing things, there's got to be a certain level of trust. And conversely, I remember when Tedford came in, he was a yeller and a screamer and a, you know, in your face, like fly off the handle kind of guy. And I said to him, I said, Coach, look, I get it. I threw a pick. I know it. I screwed up, you know, but by you having that type of overt, you know, over the top reaction, it doesn't help anything, right? I mean, you know, fine, you're venting, you're getting out your frustration, but, you know, cool, let's move on. Like, you know, let's fix the problem instead of dwelling on it. And he was able to adapt and say, okay, that's not necessarily comfortable for me, but for the success of my quarterback, I'm willing to do that. And so there was a give and take, right? I think for a great quarterback offensive coordinator relationship, there has to be a willingness to put something to be a little bit uncomfortable, right? For the player to trust that the coordinator has his best interest in mind and isn't just using this as a stepping stone for his job, to build that trust. And for a coordinator to say, all right, this, you know, let's find something. I'm not going to come in and shove something down their throat. I'm going to look at who I have and tailor what I do to them.
You mentioned Tedford. Last week we talked about Chris Peterson stepping down, and I swear to God, it was
that afternoon. Yep.
That Tedford then just walked away. Is he wired? I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but is he wired the same way as Peterson? I mean, were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised because I know how Jeff operates, and he is a redliner. He is a guy who pushes it. He burns the candle on both ends, and he had some pretty significant health issues because he always talked, you know, he would tell me, hey, you know, I had the Giants reached out and offered me the offensive coordinator position and turned it down. And he had all sorts of people from the NFL coming to him while he was still in college. And he turned those things down because he loved the college game. But at some point he wanted to make the jump, and he jumped to Tampa after he was at Cal and had taken some time off. And he got he got sick. I mean, he was having significant health problems. So I understand where he's coming from on this. And he's learned to, you know, to take care of his health first. And I think that's a situation here.
Joey Harrington in studio. Final line of questioning I was curious to get your thoughts on, because of Lamar Jackson last night, the guy's going to win MVP. How similar is what he's doing to what you witnessed with Mike Vick in Atlanta?
Mike was now let's go ahead and put the asterisk on there, you know, with everything that happened with the dogfighting, and I'm not talking about, you know, all of that stuff. I will say that at his core, Mike was a good guy and made some really crummy decisions. But as a football player, I've never seen anybody like him. Never. I mean, he would come out and without warming up playing catch warming up, I'd have to bring a receiver in to catch for me because I couldn't. I mean, it was lightning. I mean, he could truly throw, the phrase throw it through a brick wall came from Mike Vick. I mean, that's what he was like. What was so incredible, though, is that he could be at full speed getting out on the edge and come to a complete stop, and then at that point choose to throw the ball or cut the other direction, right? Where most guys didn't have the body. If they had the body control to stop their momentum and cut, there's no way they could get their body in a position to make an accurate throw, which Mike could do because of his arm strength. What Lamar has been able to do, I will say that in terms of running wise, they're really similar. What Jackson has done through the air is more consistent than what Mike did through the air. And that's the difference, is he has become such a pot. And maybe it's a great relationship between quarterback and coordinator and finding things that work for him and finding ways for him to be successful as opposed to trying to, you know, so many guys when we were playing were just trying to, you fit him into that mold. Like, here's the offense, fit into it. And at times that didn't work for Vic, but Lamar Jackson is a more efficient, more effective passer than Mike Vick is right now. And that's the difference, because he runs like Mike. I mean, it's video game type stuff. But then you throw on the fact that he's one of the most accurate passers and most productive passers in the NFL right now. Like, that just takes it to a whole nother level.
What was all the dogfighting stuff like? Were you able to remove yourself from all of that, or were you right in it, being right there when all that went down?
I was there. I mean, I was.
What was it like dealing with all that stuff?
Mike was a, I don't want to say so far above everybody else, right? I mean, he was the face of the NFL. He was Lamar Jackson. He was, you know, the guy who was just an absolute freak. And he's the kind of guy that for his entire life, nobody had ever said no. He had always been so good, and he's always been so much better than everybody else that people just acquiesced. And it created this situation. And I remember talking to Mike. I was like, I said, look, I was new that year and I was his backup. And I said, I'm not in any way trying to get into your business here. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to pry here, but I need to know how you want me to respond, because I'm being asked these questions now by the reporters and I'm not sure how to answer. Like, you know, I need you to give me some information or let me in to what you're thinking so that I can answer these questions in a way that is respectful for me, but is also respectful for you. And I'll never forget. He said, it's all right. They got nothing. You know, it's like, it's not a big deal. And so I just kind of, okay, well, I'll just kind of roll with it. And then I'll never forget the call that I got, you know, from Bill Musgrave was our quarterback coach. And he said, well, you ready to go? It was middle of July. And he said, early July. He said, you ready to go? I said, well, yeah, of course I'm ready. I'll be there in a couple weeks. He said, no, turn on the TV. I was like, what do you mean? I clicked it on and Mike's being taken away in handcuffs. And he said, are you ready to go? It's like, well, I am now.
And you had a good stable of receivers there, right?
We had an interesting developmental. We had Roddy White, who was just learning how to become a good NFL receiver. We had Joe Horn, who was in his last year of being an NFL receiver. And we have Michael Jenkins, big tall guy from Ohio State. So yeah, I mean, we did have a good group of guys there.
And I know you were ready to go. Like, this was, I imagine you at that time, it was like, this, yes, I got another shot here. I mean, you're not happy that Vic, he kind of deserved it. I mean,
absolutely deserved it. Let's not beat around the bush here. He absolutely deserved it. What I will say is, in talking with him afterwards and being around people who, and talking with people who were around him afterwards, he was a changed man. He was a remorseful person who, and it's such a childish thing to say, but who learned his lesson. Mm-hmm. But he was a different person after that. And I absolutely respect everything he did to resurrect his career and take responsibility for what he did. But what he did was horrible.
So it's not like he got hurt. You got your opportunity. What happened that year? Was that Bobby Petrino?
What happened? We don't have time for this. We don't have time for
question.
This year. We don't
okay,
have.
Okay, that'll start story time.
Because
I don't remember. I just don't remember that season.
You don't remember that season because Bobby Petrino left halfway through.
Was it halfway?
It was about week. Let's call it week 12.
I do remember that.
It was right after the end of the college football season because he finished. We had just finished playing a game and he came into the locker room and we got our butts kicked. And he said, every single one of you needs to go home. Look at yourself in the mirror and decide what you can do to help this organization get better. He turned around and he walked out the door. And the next time we saw him, he was on ESPN doing Pig Suey in Arkansas.
Wow.
Never showed up.
Wow. Okay. Well, we can. Well,
that's multiple
time.
Episodes on story time.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, it was a great season. We always appreciate you coming in every Friday. I know our listeners love it. We get a lot of great feedback about you jumping on here. So we appreciate you do it.
I'm not going anywhere.
Have a great holiday.
I'm not going. I'm coming back.
Well, it sounds like.
Are you not coming back?
I'll be back, I think. But I'm just saying, like, it sounds like for listeners, if you want to tune in, like, on the Friday after Christmas, Joey might be on, like.
But I'll be back in January.
Every channel on the station.
Oh, yeah.
Hosting a show.
Yeah, they're like the country station and the, you know, and the pop station.
Yeah,
and,
well, I think after the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You think they're going to win the Rose Bowl?
I do. Where they played against Utah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think after the Rose Bowl, we'll reconvene, and we appreciate you. Have a good holiday.
You as well.
Joey Harrington is courtesy of BMW of Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer where relationships matter. BMWPortland.com. Let's club next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.